Yeah, hold on. But you gotta wait a second. Wait a second. I'll tell you when. Okay. Today is.
What's today?
I
don't
know. Sunday the 24th. Today is Sunday the 24th, 2004.
Welcome our first speaker.
Welcome our first speaker, Pat.
Hi, I'm Patricia Manatic. And I want to thank my God for his grace for keeping me clean one day at a time. I want to thank Kenny for asking me to come out and let you guys do a 12-step call on me. You know, this is kind of sitting here knowing that you being recorded, you know, it's like kind of scary, you know. I came into the program when I was 38 years old, and I first started using drugs when I was 12, and I probably have used a whole lot of drugs, not probably, I have, you know, used a whole lot of drugs. I grew up in a dysfunctional family, and and I was also molested by a stepfather that was a minister, you know, and he started molesting me at age 5. And when he stopped, I was 17. And I found out that when I started using, you know, I was able to remove myself. You know, I was like out of pocket, you know. And so he started using at 12 and being molested, you know, it didn't matter because I wasn't there. It was like I was like removed from my own body, you know. And that went on for a long time. And you know, my stepbrother found out about it, and he said that if I didn't have sex with him, he would tell, you know. And looking back over it and doing some work, I wish he had told, you know. My stepfather penetrated me. So I grew up really being afraid, not knowing, being scared, because he had convinced me that that something was wrong with me. So I always felt that I was different, you know. So when I got here to Narcotics Anonymous, I was different and I was unique, you know. And what happened to you guys, you know, I couldn't identify with it. I looked at all the differences because I grew up looking at all the differences for so long. I grew up not being able to cry, you know, and stuffing those feelings. You know, it was like children were seen and not heard, you know. So we didn't have any rights then, you know. We couldn't say anything. So my stepfather and my mom worked, and I had to hang out with my stepbrothers, you know, and they belonged to a gang. So that would make me back then, you know, think that I was cool, that I was slick, you know, and I tried to follow in their footsteps, you know. I did the things that they did, because that's all I knew, you know. I was a tomboy. I stayed a tomboy for a long time. You know, the little girls in the neighborhood would be playing, making mud pies, and I would go get the mud pies and throw it at them, you know. But for me, like climbing trees and playing baseball in the street you know, just doing what they did. To me, that was fun. You know, I remember getting a whooping on Christmas Day, you know, because at that time we had those little hard plastic dolls, and I didn't like the dolls. I wanted the train sets, and, you know, so I beat my brothers them up and took the train set, and, you know, and we had an apricot tree, and I remember climbing up in that apricot tree. My mom told me I had to come down sooner or later. When I came down, she commenced to, you know, wave it. When I used drugs, it satisfied me. You know, it started, you know, my first drug of choice was Robitussin. You know, we had drug stores at that time. Now they call pharmacies. You know, and I remember going in there stealing that Robitussin off of that shelf. You know, I believe that I was an addict when I came out of my mom's womb because of some of the things that I did as a youngster. You know, that's just to qualify as an addict. You know, that I used plenty of drugs. I used the drugs that made you see stuff. You know, I used the drugs that, you know, that make you think you can fly. You know, just a whole lot of stuff, you know. And I really thought it was recreation drugs at the time. I didn't know at the time that I was going to abuse it and I was going to become an addict and I was going to get addicted to them. You know what I'm saying? I don't like to stay into the drug laws because I can start glorifying it. And that's just me. You know, the basic text says all I have to do is disqualify. So I disqualify. I like to go into the recovery. You know, I've been around here. Well, when I got here April the 1st, 1986. And I would have to go to a recovery house. You know, I started, now I'm going to back up because, you know, being told as a young child that you're never going to amount to anything, and if you keep doing what you're doing, you're not going to live to be 21. And I'm saying it is now. You know what I'm saying? I just retired and from a job, and only by the grace of God that I retired being on there for 35 years. You know, and that was God because, you know, I used all up inside them buildings and the restrooms, you know, and what happened was that I set out to be this perfect human being. I was going to prove to my stepfather, you know, that he was a liar, that I was going to amount to something. So I set out, you know, to get all this materialistic stuff to fix me. You know, I had the houses, I had the cars, the income property, you know, all the jewelry and all of that stuff, and it still was a hole in my gut as big as this room. You know, that wasn't fixing me. You know, at the time I thought it was. I had a daughter, and I'll get into that, you know, I had to accept that she was my stepfather. You know, and it was really hard at first. You know, for me, it's like acceptance, you know, is the key for me. You know, I have to accept things when I don't want to accept them. You know, when I think that it's supposed to go the other way, I got to take a look at myself. I have to take a look at my part. In that recovery house, when I got there, I really didn't want to be there. I really didn't know why I was there. I didn't know what to expect. And back then, you know, they used to make you wear signs. And it was like a behavior modification. You know, you had to wear these signs. And they made me wear this sign that was slick, hip, and cool. You know, they would shave the men's hair, you know, and I was like, boy, this is degrading up in here, you know, and their counselors there was like younger than me, you know, and I was like, you know, they can't tell me nothing. I'm 38. How they gonna tell me what to do, you know, and it's like, you know, they telling you when to get up, when to go to bed, when to go to the restroom, when to do this. I was like, oh, no, I'm in the wrong place, you know. And I used to pass by that place going when I was able to go to work. And I used to see them outside doing exercise. And I believed that it was a convalescent hospital, you know, at that time. You know, and little did I know that I was going to get in up in there for 6 months, you know. I conformed to just enough just to get by, not to get on restrictions. You know, not to have to do any writing, any standards and all that stuff. I can, you know, being an addict, you know, I don't know about y'all, but, you know, I can be the director, the script writer, you know, I can be behind the camera, you know, working the camera. I can do all of that, you know, and so it's like I just conform just enough not to get into any trouble. I remember them having two meetings coming in there on Monday nights and Friday nights, and, they would get up to the podium and they would cheer, and I'd be like, you know what? I couldn't identify. You know, I, like I said, I was different and I was unique. I thought they were getting paid. You know, I asked one of the counselors, you know, how much they getting paid, because I wanted some of that money, you know. And when they would be sharing from the podium, you know, I thought they were lying. You know, they were looking good. They had the rate. They had, you know, whatever jewelry they were wearing, you know, and I thought they had stole the jewelry, you know, because that was my M.O. stealing, you know. And I just didn't believe what they were saying. And then I thought it was a cult. You know, my disease, man, is centered in my thinking, and it would trick me. You know, I thought it was a cult because of what they were saying and how they were doing and all that. And I wouldn't drink the coffee. Even in the recovery house, I wouldn't drink that coffee. I thought they wanted to get into my brain. I thought it was a Jim Jones. You know, and I was going to be the one that was going to be alive and tell the media what happened. So I watched them and I watched them, you know, and they kept drinking the coffee and they kept coming back, you know, and I'm like, any day now, you know, any minute now, you know, and they never did. They kept coming back, you know, and after being in there 6 months, you know, they told me that they couldn't do anything for me. So they transferred me to their outpatient, and being the type of addict that I am, you know, I'm going to show you. I'm going to show them. And I'm going straight to the cooker and do what I do best. You know, I came back. I left in August, came back in September the 4th, 1986. And I haven't found it necessary yet to go back out. You know, and that's only by God's grace. You know, the old timers would tell us, you know, you can't share. Because what you going to share about, you know, I remember the very first sponsor that I had taking me to a meeting, and it was like a candlelight, and she said, you sit up in the front, and she sat behind me, and I was like, ooh, she liked me, because she gonna let me get mine first. You know, the candles, I thought, you know, because I don't know if you guys like me, but candles became light for me in my house. You know what I'm saying? I had to use candles to see. You know? And when we were sitting there in candles, you know what ran through my head? You know, I started rolling up my sleeve and stuff, started sitting up straight. Yeah. And little did I know that they went the opposite direction. They started talking about Narcotics Anonymous, and they started sharing their feelings, you know, and it was like, wow. You know, I still didn't believe. I still didn't drink that coffee, you know. And I really thought it was a cult. You know, after being around here for a while, you know, I still believe that it's a cult, but it's all right. You know, because it has changed my life, you know, for the better. You know, so I got another sponsor, and then I got another sponsor, and, you know, the sponsor that I had, we started working the steps. And that's what I had to do. I had to get into me and get rid of that garbage that I was carrying around for so long. Some deep, dark secrets that I said that I was never going to tell anybody. You know, I wanted to hold on to that. You know, I wanted to hold on to all them secrets. I wasn't going to tell y'all my secrets. I wasn't going to tell y'all nothing. Because I said, y'all are a bunch of gossipers, you know, and y'all don't need to know my business. Because I had some business, you know, and I remember them telling me, you ain't got no business, you know. And I battled with them on that one. Yeah, I do, you know. I guess you could say I was one of them thickhead addicts, and, you know, you have to show me, you know. You know, they used to fellowship after the meetings, and I would run. I would run. As soon as after the meetings, I would just, like, get away because I didn't want them to know me. See, I had that self-centered fear, you know, that if they knew me, they wouldn't like me. If they really knew who I was, they wouldn't like me, you know. And that's a part of my character defects, being having that self-centered fear, you know. And I had to work the steps in order to get okay with me, you know. And it's like, you know, what you think about me, that's on you, you know. I had to work the steps in order to walk with my head up, because I walked with my head down for so long, you know. Today I can walk with it up high, you know, and not go through any pain. And if I go through pain, I know what to do, you know. This sponsor that I had, she got loaded at 14 years clean. And I was like, wow, so what do I do now? You know, I was in service. I'm a backup. With that sponsor, I'm so grateful for what she taught me, because at 5 years clean, I wanted to commit suicide and homicide. Because if he was with me, he was going too. You know, because I had to get into somewhere where I needed just a little bit more help. I had worked the steps. I was applying them into my life. But during that fourth step, you know, the molestation came out, you know, and it brought up those feelings, and I didn't want to feel again. You know, I know that I couldn't go use, but I didn't want to feel what I was feeling. And the basic text talks about sometimes we have to seek outside help. You know, and that was for me. I had to go outside and seek some outside help, because I was so emotional, you know, and I had stuffed this for so long, you know, that if I believe that if I didn't get the help, you know, that I would have went crazy around here. You know what I'm saying? I would have went crazy, you know, because I was already halfway there, you know, because I was seeing stuff that nobody else saw. You know, in the meetings, I would be swatting, you know what I'm saying? And they'd be looking at me like, but you different and you unique. Yeah, I am, because you don't see that, you know. Wow. And anyway, you know, I went out and I got this outside help, you know, and that was the best thing, you know. If it hadn't been the steps, you know, and the program that's in that book that led me there to get that help, that you know, I wouldn't be sitting here today. You know, they used to talk about those no matter yet. And see, when I came around, the old timers, they did not explain to you nothing. They just say, do it. That's it. Just do it. And I was like, why? Because I say so. You know, and I'm like, you don't know who I am. You know, I got some power around here. You know, that's what I thought. Anyway, but I did it, you know, because I didn't want what I had. You know, I didn't want to go back out, and I didn't want to use anything, because I became, you know, I would let that gorilla out. You know what I'm saying? I would become a Dr. Jekyll and Mrs. Hyde. And, you know, I didn't want that gorilla to come out. You know, I didn't want that person that I had became, stooping to animal level, not to come out anymore. You know, and after my sponsor relapsed after being around here 14 years, you know, my head, my disease, see, I got a disease sitting on my left shoulder, excuse me, and I got recovery sitting on my right shoulder, and they be talking, they be conversing with each other. You know, I don't know if y'all know about that. You know, they be conversing with each other, you know, gonna see who's gonna win. You know what I'm saying? They be like talking, the disease be saying, yeah, you can go do this, you know, and the recovery say, yeah, but what about, you know, the feelings, what about the principles? You know, are you willing, you know, to pay that spiritual price, you know? And it was like, wow, because I've done some things around here being clean that, you know, I'm not proud of, you know, and some things that I've done would actually send me to the penitentiary, and I've never been to the penitentiary, you know. And see, my disease tell me that greed, you know, that I need more money, you know, more money, more money, more money. You know, my disease tells me a whole lot. After that lady relapsed, I had to ask my grand sponsor to be my sponsor. You know, and I used to hear them say, well, I got a sponsor that has a sponsor, that has a sponsor, and it would leave me blank. I'd be like, okay, now what? You know, and I found out what it meant is that, you know, my grand sponsor knew about me, so why not ask her to be my sponsor? And that's what I did. You know, and today she's still my sponsor. You know, December of 2000, I lost my mom, you know, and she died of cancer. And I used to always tell my mom, you know what, because we had got a relationship, you know, she would be giving me my cake when I would be celebrating. You know, we had got that daughter-mother relationship, because for a long time, you know, I just liked her. you know, I just liked her for a long time because she was supposed to be there for me, you know. And I do know now that, you know, she had to work nights and she did the best that she could do at that time. You know, and why did, I had to look at my part, why didn't you speak up? For fear. You know, that fear. She died in December 2000, and I ended up on a 5150. But see, then, the type of person that I am, see that addict, that slick person, I wanted some time, more time off from work. That's what it was. So, you know, I went to the employee assistant program and told them that I was going to commit suicide. You know, trying to be slick. You know, and they rushed me to the hospital, and I ended up on a 5150 up in there. When I got in there, I was like, oh my God. It wasn't no joke, and they trying to make you take this medication, and they watching under your tongue, and you know, they giving you this stuff to make you walk like a zombie, and you doing the old robot and all that stuff, you know, and it was like, see, that's what you get. You know, that's what you get for trying to do something slick, you know, one more time, you know, man, that was an experience, you know, because I already thought when I went through that recovery house, that was an institution, and here I did, you know, ended up in another institution, a real one. That's what I call it. Wow. You know, June the 12th of 2002, my daughter passed. She was like 38. And August the 31st of 2002, my son passed. And they were the only two children that I had. But you know what? I didn't go get loaded. You know, I didn't get loaded. And, man, that was something that it was like, wow. I couldn't believe it, you know, because for me, if you're an addict like me, it's like you want to fix those feelings you don't want to feel. So what I do, I go medicate. And I cannot medicate today. You know, losing those children, adult children, was the hardest thing that I'm still going through, you know, to do, being clean, you know. I'm grateful to the program, to the fellowship, because you know what, they were there for me. You know, this was a child that I just had to get into some acceptance and share. My daughter, I would say that she died of cancer, but in reality, you know, I talked about that self-centered fear for what you think of me. You know, I had to get honest with myself. You know, and I had to share that, you know, she died of, she was HIV positive, and she died of AIDS. Because, see, I blamed me for it. You know, I blamed me for it because it's like, if I hadn't have been using da-da-da-da-da, you know, I would have been able to take care of her. You know, I would have been able to do this. I would have been able to be a parent, you know, and tell her, you know, use a condom and da-da-da-da, you know. And so along, you know, it's been like a couple years now, you know, and I had to do a lot of writing. I had to do a lot of releasing. You know, for me it was hard to cry. You know, my son's birthday was like August the 24th, and he passed August the 31st, you know, after we had just buried his sister, you know. And it was so hard for me to cry because I like stuffing. You know, I like stuffing those tears. You know, I like stuffing those feelings. You know, I don't want to feel, but I like stuffing because it's comfortable, you know, not being able to feel. But, you know, walking through their death, you know, being clean, man, that's a miracle. That's why it says by God's grace that I'm still here, you know. What I had to do is that my daughter, I watched her take her last breath, you know. But my son, you know, I missed him taking his last breath. And I had to do a goodbye letter. You know, it's like I got to do some work around here to stay here. You know, I got to work on me. You know, I got to have that self-honesty. Because if I can't be honest with myself, I can't be honest with you. You know, and that's what the program tells me, is that you have to have some self-honesty. You have to have some willingness. You know, you have to have some humility. You know, and I'm talking about the spiritual principles that behind those steps. You know, you have to have some perseverance, you know, for me, you know. And that's what I'm doing today. I'm shooting up, showing up, you know, and sometimes I don't even want to be there, you know, or be in a meeting, but you know what? I got to do it because this is my life that I'm saving, you know, and I got to save my life. You know, the beauty part about that is that, you know, I'm a grandmother 3 times. You know, had a granddaughter that was born after my son, and I'm a great grandmother. You know, was born after my daughter passed. And you know, if I had took myself out, did that chicken way, you know, that I wouldn't have been able to see them. You know, and they are the apple of my eye. You know, I stay in a service around here. You know, I have sponsees. I've been in service since I came back September the 4th. You know, they gave me a commitment real early. Real early they gave me a commitment. You know, and I've been of service for 18 years around here. And see, that keeps me connected. You know, that keeps me coming back. That keeps me interacting with people, you know, and giving back what's so freely given to me, because that's what they told me I had to do, you know, is that the only way that you could keep it is you got to give it back one way or the other. I don't hide out behind, you know, being of service, because, you know, my disease tell me if I do that, you know, that it'll be all right. And I could do that, I just hide out, you know, get all these service work, and then what am I doing for me, you know? I like, I love the 11th step because you know what the 11th step has afforded me to do some work. You know, it has afforded me to get back a conscious contact with my God, and it talks about that. You know, getting a conscious contact with the power greater than me. You know, because I had vowed never to step foot in a church. And I know that this is a spiritual program, and it's not a religious program, but see, this is part of my story, you know, and you know, I joined church and I got baptized, you know, and that was only God, you know, that I had to do that, because I needed a conscious contact with a higher power. You know, I thought that I had him when I was working the steps, but when something happened dramatic, you know, when you lose both of your kids, you know, it's like you better have somebody more powerful than you. You know, and that's why they tell us, you know, to get a power greater than ourselves, you know, that we can that can restore it to some sanity. You know, because I was out there. I was like, you know, I don't want to live, take my life. You know, I love Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I show up when I'm asked to speak, you know, I don't turn down an NA request, you know, unless I'm ill. And I don't mean mentally ill. I mean physically ill. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm already mentally ill somewhat, you know. And I'm here just to get, you know, a little bit better with me. And I'm so glad, just, you know, that I've met this a person, you know, what I like to call Patsy, which is my inner child, my little girl. I've met her, you know, by working those steps and doing some work on me, you know, and it's okay. See, don't, if you see me outside these rooms, please don't call me Patsy, because you really don't want to meet her, you know. You know, because sometimes she scares me, you know, but it's okay, and because we all got, and I believe that we all got, you know, different personalities, especially if you use drugs, you know. I got a whole lot of them that come out any day now, you know. They just under arrest right now. You know, like the disease, you know. For me, this is a selfless program, you know. You know, and it talks about each one, teach one, you know. And the more that I stay around here, I know that I am closer to that next one. The longer I stay, I'm closer to the next one. And you might be looking at me like, you know, phew. And I also don't know that absence does not equal recovery. Because see, you know, you can get a whole lot of time around here, you know, but watch me when I get outside these rooms. You know, for some reason when you get to the podium, it start making me talk all that good stuff, but watch when you get outside. And that's why, you know, what the steps told me that I have to practice in all my affairs. That means inside and outside these rooms. I'm not perfect, because I still get road rage, you know, sometimes. I get road rage sometimes, you know. I still want to be in control, you know. My sponsor said that that I am self-righteous. You know, and it's all right, because I'm dealing with that self-righteousness, you know. It's getting better, you know. You know, if you're newer than me, I want to welcome you to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, this is the only place that I have found that I need to be, you know, that I like being, you know. I want to tell you that to get a power greater than yourself, I want to tell you, you know, get a sponsor, you know, work some steps so you won't be walking around here doing this and wondering why. You know, and get to the person that you meet. You may like them. You know, because that's all the steps, you know, that's all they did for me is introduce me to me. You know, that's all. The promises that I got out of that basic text is that, you know, the promise from freedom, the freedom from active addiction, and that's all I needed. You know, and with closing, you know, I'm going to leave you with this, is that, you know, a closed mind is a symptom of our disease. An open mind is essential in our recovery. Thank you for allowing me to share.